Nala Katech Wachuk Mort Kayan Kadak Nijar Bujar. We acknowledge Noongar people as the original custodians of this land. Good evening, council staff, ladies and gentlemen. I invite you to bow your head in prayer. Almighty God, we ask you to guide us in all our discussions, to show goodness, honesty, understanding and wisdom in all that we undertake for the benefit of the city of Joondalup and our residents. May we respect each other's views at all times, and we ask all of this in your name. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. Good evening, councillors, staff, ladies and gentlemen. I declare this council meeting open at 6:30 p.m. Members of the public gallery are reminded it is a requirement under the Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013 to act in a courteous and respectful manner when in the council chamber. You are asked to show respect to anyone who is exercising their right to ask questions of the council and or to deliver public statements. I ask that respect extend to such people whenever they are on city premises while waiting for or having taken their opportunity to ask questions or to deliver a public statement. Under the local law, a person must not create a disturbance by interrupting or interfering with the orderly conduct of proceedings. This includes expressing approval or dissent by conversing or by any other means. I would also like to remind members of the public to show proper respect to the city's elected members and staff during proceedings. The next item on the agenda for this evening is declarations of financial interest, proximity interest, and interest that may affect impartiality. We have before us declaration of financial interest from Councillor Lewis Hutton for item 13.1.1, proposed revisions to the Alfresco Activities Local Planning Policy and draft Alfresco Spaces Guidelines. It's an indirect financial interest because Councillor Hutton's family business is subject to the policy. We also have a final interest declaration from Director Matt Humphrey, Director of Corporate Services, for item 14.1, which is a confidential item for us. On the employment contract for the Director of Corporate Services, financial interest, as this item relates to Mr. Humphrey's contract of employment. We have before us a declaration of interest that may affect impartiality from Councillor Rowan O'Neill, item 12.12, invitation to join panel of pre-qualified suppliers 022/24 for the supply and delivery of tree stock. Councillor O'Neill worked for Benara Nurseries many years ago. Declaration from Deputy Mayor, Councillor Adrian Hill. Item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review, interest that may affect impartiality. Councillor Hill is a resident within the Burns Beach Sire area and a former chairperson of Burns Beach Residents Association, and he's also currently a member of Burns Beach Residents Association. From Councillor Lewis Hutton, an interest that may affect impartiality. Item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review. Councillor Hutton is a former member of the Burns Beach Residents Association Committee. I have a number of other declarations before me. From Councillor Christine Hamilton Prime, for item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review, interest that may affect impartiality, in that the SAR Committee members of Harbour Rise Homeowners Association are known to Councillor Hamilton Prime. From Councillor Philip Ventura, interest that may affect impartiality, for item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review. The extent of the interest is that a SARS Committee member from Harbour Rise are known to Councillor Ventura. Declaration any more? No. Councillors, any other declarations of interest for tonight's meeting? Councillor May.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. 13.1.6 as well. I'm just filling in the form. Committee members of Woodvale Waters Landowners Association and Harbour Rise Residents Association are known to me.
Thank you. Any other elected amendments with declarations of interest for tonight's agenda? So whilst Councillor May is completing his form, we'll just move on to the next item, being deputations, and this item was dealt with at the briefing session held on 10th of September 2024. The next item on the agenda is public question time. Questions have been received prior to the council meeting from A. Pollard from Hillary's, and Danga from Belden, M. O'Byrne from Kinross, and M. Quart from Ocean Reef. There is a set of procedures relating to public question time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You have the opportunity to ask two questions, and your questions should be directed to myself as chair and be asked in a polite and respectful manner. Please state your name and address for the public record. I have before me a register for public question time. On this list, can I call forward Mr. Travis Mijet? And please state your name and address for the public record. Thank you.
Travis Mijet, 26 Drayton Greenway, Kingsley. My two questions relate to 11.2 petition that was unanimously accepted by the city on the 23rd of July regarding the city investigating the incredibly poor noise wall location along Twickenham Drive, which has led local residents to significantly unnecessary high traffic noise levels. My two questions are these. First one is, who is conducting the investigation? And the second one, given that there has been no update provided on tonight's agenda, has the investigation started?
Thank you to Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The investigation, or at least the engagement with Main Roads WA, is being led by our Planning and Development, Planning and Community Development Directorate. Within that directorate, we have our Environmental Health Team. They're our specialists in relation to noise and acoustic issues. I do know that there's no update in this round of the status of petitions update, but the city has located a contact at Main Roads to be able to engage with, and that will be the first step, is to engage with them and understand what specific investigations they undertook in terms of identifying what they considered to be, I guess, the ultimate outcome or their preferred outcome in terms of why they've built the noise wall in the way that they have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have a follow-up question? No. Can I call forward Mr. Mitch Sedaris? Can I ask that you please state your name and address for the public record? Thank you.
Okay. Mitch Sedaris, 12 Page Drive, Molly. First question relates to in December last year, I was, as lead petitioner, I had a petition dealing with the CHAR maps submitted to council. Can you give us an update as to where that is and when that will become public in a council report?
Thank you. Ms. Muscario.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Mr. Sedaris, the items on the agenda this evening in terms of progressing the CHAR map, we've put the draft project plan and terms of reference for the establishment of the community reference group. So council will decide on that tonight, and pending the outcomes of that, we'll proceed with the project, which will lead to the establishment of the new CHAR map.
You have a second question, Mr. Sedaris.
That probably would have read that listen to the first question. Second question, just bear with me. Oh, that's right. Reading item I think it's 12.7, dealing with the proposed Charmac, or plan for the Charmac. I notice that the item, the plan, is dated the 2024. There's no reference whatsoever to the previous project plan for 2016 to 2023. Can you please provide me a link or access to the project plan dealing with the development of the CHARMAPs between those 2 year periods?
Thank you. Ms. McCurrier.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The project plan that is included in the report for the item that's on the agenda this evening is in relation to the development of a new CHARMAP. Council decided at the December 2023 meeting that we were to develop a new CHARMAP, and that's what this project plan is outlining.
It wasn't a question, but obviously.
Thank you, Mrs. Sedaris. Are there any members of the public in the gallery wishing to ask a question tonight? Yes, thank you, Ms. Cork. Please state your name and address for the public record.
Michelle Cork, 15 Cravelmore, Ocean Reef. There's only got one question on page 158 on item 13.1.6, that the CEO has undertaken targeted consultation with the SAR representative groups on the proposed revised policy and cost allocation model. My question is, given that the cost is mostly coming out from the non-SAR residents, why aren't we being consulted?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It was a decision by elected members for administration to actually speak to targeted consultation with the affected groups to see regarding the administration fee, and that's what the administration undertook.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public gallery wishing to ask public questions tonight? If not, I'll declare public question time closed and we'll move to public statement time. There is a set of procedures relating to public statement time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You are able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes, and your statement should be directed to myself as chair and shall be polite and respectful. No questions or discussion will occur at the end of your statement. Please come forward and state your name and address for the public record. I have before me a register of public statement time, and the first person listed, could you come forward, please, Mr. Brian Saunders. Please state your name and address for the public record.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, elected members, council, representatives of the city. My name is Brian Saunders, and my residence is at 2 Withers Grove, Woodvale, in the city of Joondalup. I speak tonight on behalf of the 4 current SAR areas, all of which are represented here this evening. We acknowledge and thank the officers for their recommendation in relation to Agenda Item 13.1.6 in not supporting the inclusion of city's internal administration costs within the annual specified area rate cost. We also acknowledge that the officers' recommendation is in accordance with the recommendation of the Policy Committee at its meeting held on Monday the 2nd of September. We thank the committee for their recommendation to not support the inclusion of the city's internal administration cost within the annual specified area rate cost. As detailed in our previous correspondence to the city, the positive effect that SAR has on the rateable value of properties within the SAR areas in turn generates additional income for the city of Joondalup by way of significant increase in the gross rental values when compared to similar estates, suburbs in the city which do not have an SAR. Based upon the evidence provided to us by real estate agents, the annual additional rates paid by the 4 SARs is estimated to be in the order of $700,000 per annum. Each of the 4 SAR areas contain one or more areas of high attraction with significant use by residents based outside of the SAR areas. Enhanced landscaping and maintenance of these areas is paid for by SAR, which totals more than $725,000 annually. We consider the above. When considering the above, our firm belief is that the direct and indirect benefits of SAR to the city far exceed any administration cost the city may incur in managing some of the requirements of the SAR. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Can I next call forward Mr. Kim Allen? Please state your name and address for the public record.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. My name is Kim Allen. I live in Reacher Place, Ocean Reef. I'd like to make a statement in relation to the City of Joondalup Coastal Hazard Risk Management and Adaption Plan, known as CHARMAP. Firstly, I'd like to thank the City of Joondalup for recognising our community passion and collective wisdom in relation to the protection of our coastal assets in establishing the CHARMAP Community Reference Group. This follows the previous consultant's recommendations for structural mitigation measures. Although there is a cost associated with the establishment and operation of the reference group, it's important to note that the community members are providing their services free of charge, and in some cases, potential representatives may have formal qualifications in the area of coastal processes and management. The community was listened to by Council in December 2023. It's taken a long time to get to this point. The community remains engaged to ensure that unnecessary coastal structures aren't introduced to Mullaloo Beach. Decisions made by Council tonight on this issue will respect and reflect the passion of our community to protect our priceless asset. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Could I please call forward Ms. Beth Hewitt? Please state your name and address for the public record. Thank you.
Beth Hewitt for Woodview Court, Edgewater. The CHARMAP reference group is being set up for 3 years, though the plan itself is set to cover at least 30 years of potential sea rising. Yes, in 3 years, the group can provide direction to the CHARMAP planners about the direction the residents would like the plan to go. But surely this is a long-term project, an ongoing problem. The reference group should be also a long-term, ongoing advisory group. I can understand that the city wants to get views from a variety of sources, youth, Indigenous, environmentalists, but I do hope it will tap into the excellent experiences and resources of the many coastal engineers within Perth who are willing to help share freely their research, knowledge, skills, ideas and experience. The city says it's global, and to find the best solution, it needs to look globally and not just at the beaches north and south of the city. The city says it's bold. It needs to be courageous to find alternative solutions to this issue. The city says it's creative. Don't copy the failed ideas of others. Be leaders in this area. And finally, the city says it's prosperous. Prosperity isn't just a dollar value. It comes when the community is actively involved, flourishing physically and thriving mentally within the beautiful environment and beaches we have been blessed with. Don't destroy the beaches by sticking with the failed concepts of the previous consultants. The community has already rejected these and demands better.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Could I call forward Ms. Sue North? Please state your name and address for the public record.
Sue North, 47 Parkwood Avenue, Woodvale. Good evening. Congratulations to the City on its recent refurbishment of the interior of Woodvale Library. Public libraries are more important than ever in today's fast-changing world. They provide the community with access to information, ideas and tools that support people develop the skills they need to navigate information effectively and ethically, as well as participating in community life. There is no doubt that Woodvale Library provides us with a safe, friendly community hub that is well used and valued. It had almost 100,000 visitors last financial year, and 13,000 people attended the 600 programs held in the library during this 12-month period. Congratulations to the Woodvale Library staff on an outstanding job. This latest refurbishment shows how a modest investment can be used well. It has taken into account the community's feedback over a number of years to provide a practical and flexible space that can be used by everyone from babyhood to old age. For the first time, the Justice of the Peace has a much-needed private area for what are often sensitive and confidential conversations. Families of young children have a room for programs where they can make noise without disturbing others. Young people can collaborate on projects and school assignments. Book groups have their own space to meet and talk. The room can become a quiet study space in the lead-up to exams, and importantly, it provides a dedicated area for the many well-attended activities and workshops hosted by the library. In closing, I'd like to acknowledge the support of the Mayor and Central Ward councillors for the refurbishment. But what really struck me when talking to library staff was how supported and empowered they felt by the senior administration, particularly their manager, as well as the interest and encouragement shown by their director and the CEO. This shows real leadership. So thank you, and once again, congratulations.
Thank you, Ms. North. Can I call forward Mr. Mitch Sedaris? Please state your name and address for the public record.
Yeah, Mitch Sedaris, 12 Page Drive, Mullee. I seek your indulgence. I just need something read out. This is the petition that was submitted in December 2023 and fully adopted by this council.
We, the undersigned, all being electors of the City of Joondalup, do respectfully request that the council, one, reject the City Coastal Hazard Risk Management and Adaption Plan, dated 23rd of May 2023, and the use of groins, Hillaries to Ocean Reef. Two, prepare a new meaningful char map developed by a recognised multidiscipline consortium engaged using the char map scope of works template to ensure all works and elements are consistent with state policy requirements. Three, prepare a char map in an open and transparent process where the broader community is regularly updated and consulted during the development process. Four, prepare a char map using current and internationally recognised scientific-based evidence. Five, establish a steering committee to provide guidance and oversight as set out in state policy.
Thank you. Thank you. If you read the report that's presented to Council tonight, first off, the petition and the details of that petition is not mentioned at all, nor are all those five dot points. When you read the details of the project plan, which starts in January this year, I think it is, it makes no reference to those details. State Planning Policy 2.6 is a planning policy. It's not a conservation policy, an environmental policy, a climate change policy. It's a strategic planning policy. And I find that I'm disappointed that, one, there are no, and I would expect the Director of Planning to be in the lead team, the one that holds and manages the project. When you look at the details and you look at the report tonight, remember those words. There are only five dot points.
Thank you, Mr. Sedaris. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I call forward, please, Ms. Michelle Kwok? Please state your name and address for the public record.
Good evening. Michelle Kwok, 15 Crabble, Ocean Reef. Yesterday, I attended an informative, interactive, sustainable pest management workshop at Woodvale Library as part of the No Spray Spring program. Dr. Lizzie Lowe informed us that insects and spiders are vital for healthy ecosystems. They play an important role in pest control, decomposition, and pollination. They're also a food source for wildlife. Despite these important roles, we often thoughtlessly kill these creatures through the broad use of pesticides, which also affects human, pets, and wildlife. David Pickett, a CSIRO scientist, also spoke about non-toxic methods of termite control. He informed us that most of the annual routine termites treatment are not necessary. Only two species of the 350 species of termites are invasive. Identifying the species is important, then they can target the nest. We hope the city will carry on with this worthwhile educational program, not just in spring, but all year round. In a democratic society, everyone should have a say on issues that can impact on them. It's evident that asking a certain interest group will generate a certain answer. At the moment, it seems that we have small percentage, 5% influencing what the other 95% can or cannot do. One example is the removal of the 24-hour glyphosate caution signage. And if you ask the 5% if they would like the 95% subsidizing the services, of course, the answer is yes. Let's hope we can even out this two-tier system in the city by involving 95% in decision-making processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Are there any other members of the public in the gallery wishing to make a public statement this evening? If not, I declare public statement time closed. Next time item on the agenda is apologies and leave of absence. We have a leave of absence previously approved for Mayor Albert Jacob from the 12th of September to the 2nd of October inclusive. Elected members, are there any other requests for leave of absence? Councillor Vinciullo.
Yes, thank you. Through you, I'll be requesting the 29th of September to the 20th of October.
Thank you. Any other elected members with leave of absence requests? If there are no further requests, I will put forward a recommendation that Council approves a request for leave of absence from Council duties for Councillor Vinciullo covering the period 29th September to 20th October 2024. Do we have a mover for that, Councillor Hamilton Prime, and a seconder? Councillor Pitsey. Elected members? Elected members, by a show of hands, please indicate whether you support the recommendation before us. I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. With no further requests for leave of absence, the next item on the agenda is confirmation of minutes. The recommendation before us is that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of Council held on the 27th of August 2024 be confirmed as a true and correct record. Do we have a mover for that? Councillor Ventura and a seconder? Councillor Pitsey, thank you. Councillors, please cast your vote using the screens before you. Thank you. I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item on tonight's agenda is announcements by the presiding member without discussion. More success for Craigie Leisure Centre. Craigie Leisure Centre has again proven itself as one of Western Australia's premier aquatic facilities after winning the Sustainability Award at the 2024 WA Aquatic Recreation Industry Awards. Craigie was recognised for the $1.4 million refurbishment of its geothermal pool, which provides significant annual cost savings to the operations of the centre, along with considerable reductions in emissions. This award celebrates excellence in sustainability practices in the built environment, focusing on energy and resource management within aquatic facilities. This latest accolade comes after the centre was named Parks and Leisure Australia's Best Community Facility in WA. The centre will contest the national component of that award in October. Finals fever. Tickets are now available for the final of the City of Joondalup Young Musician of the Year Award presented by Perth Symphony Orchestra. The competition final will be held at Sorrento's Sacred Heart College on Sunday the 6th of October. Attendees can enjoy performances from some of Western Australia's finest young musicians in a range of instrument categories. Finalists will compete for the coveted City of Joondalup Young Musician of the Year Award title, a share of the prize pool, and an opportunity to perform with the Perth Symphony Orchestra. Ticket details can be found at perthsymphony.com. The city's much-loved Little Feet Festival returns to the grounds of Edith Cowan University on Sunday the 13th of October. With activities and performances by some of WA's best children's entertainers, plus some special interstate guests, the 2024 festival is shaping up as this year's number one unmissable event for families. Little Feet Festival 2024 is all about farming, gardening and growing, with festival goers invited to get their hands dirty for 5 hours of free, family-friendly fun. Little Feet runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Programming details are available on the city's website. The Joondalup Festival of Motoring will return to the Joondalup City Centre in May 2025. Last month, our council agreed to sponsor this significant event for a third year after the 2024 festival, which was delayed by 6 months due to the Marjinyup bushfire, through a crowd of more than 20,000 people. Joondalup Festival of Motoring 2025 will run over 3 days, from Friday the 2nd of May to Sunday the 4th of May. The Joondalup City Sprint, the highlight for many, will again be held on the final day and will involve drivers of cars of all shapes and sizes tackling the street circuit in a time trial format. Static car displays, activations and entertainment will again be part of the programming. The next item on the agenda is identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There is one confidential report, being item 14.1, employment contract for Director of Corporate Services. We also have two non-confidential reports with confidential attachments. These are items 12.12 and 12.13. So item 14.1, being confidential, will be dealt with behind closed doors. Elected members, if there is any discussion on the confidential attachments to items 12.12 or 12.13, they will also be dealt with behind closed doors. Can I ask if any elected members intend to discuss the confidential attachments to items 12.12 or 12.13? If not, we do not need to move those two reports to the confidential section of the agenda tonight. We're now going to move a motion to change the order of business. The motion to move is that Council, in accordance with Clause 14.1 of the City of Joondalup Meeting Procedures, Local Law 2013, suspends the operation of Clause 4.3, Order of Business of the City of Joondalup Meeting Procedures, Local Law 2013, to enable the consideration of Item 14.1, Confidential Employment Contract, Director Corporate Services, to be discussed after motions of which previous notice have been given. Can we have a mover for that motion? Thank you, Councillor Hamilton Prime, and a seconder, Councillor Hutton. Elected members, please cast your vote using the screens in front of you. Thank you. I declare the vote closed and carried unanimously. The next item on the agenda is petitions. So the city is in receipt of one petition, as included in tonight's agenda, being a petition in relation to a request that the city does not proceed with the planned pathway for Brockadale Avenue in Duncraig. Are there any further petitions from elected members? There being none, as per the presentation of petitions protocol, petitions presented at tonight's council meeting or after the briefing session will be received and checked for validity in accordance with clause 5.11.1 of the city's meeting procedures local law and be included in next month's council agenda. The recommendation before us for this evening is that the following petition be received and referred to the CEO for action. That being a 25 signature petition that has been received from residents of the city of Joondalup requesting the city do not proceed with the planned pathway for Brockadale Avenue in Duncraig. Can I have a mover for that motion? Thank you, Councillor Chester, and seconded by Councillor Fishwick. Councillors, please cast your votes using the screens before you. Thank you. I declare voting closed and the item is carried unanimously. The next section on tonight's agenda is the reports. And so I will be inviting elected members to extract particular reports that they wish to move for tonight's agenda. Last month, the Mayor started with Councillor Hamilton Prime, so it's my intention tonight to start with Councillor Pizzey and move in this order around the table. Councillor Pizzey, do you have any items to be extracted?
Just 12.7, please.
Thank you. Councillor May.
No, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Councillor Jones.
No, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Councillor Kingston.
I have an alternate for 12.6, status of petitions, and I've got a notice of motion at 16.1, and then as far as the policy committee reports, as per the local law, I'll be withdrawing those in preference to any other members who seeks to withdraw them.
Thank you. That being 13.1.1 through to 13.1.6.
That's only if somebody wishes to withdraw them. So in that case, I will...
So if an elected member wishes to withdraw, then you will actually withdraw them?
Yeah, then I will withdraw them.
Thank you.
But if not, then no.
Okay, understood. Councillor Hutton.
Pen, no additional.
Thank you. None from myself. Councillor Raftus.
Uh, 13.1.6, please.
Okay, so as Councillor Kingston indicated, he'll be given the call on that one. Any further from Councillor Raftus? Councillor Fishwick.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. 12.4, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor O'Neill?
Nothing this evening, thank you.
Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. 13.1.2.
Okay, and as Councillor Kingston indicated earlier, he'll be calling that one out. Anything further, Councillor Chester? Councillor Ventura?
None for me this evening, thank you.
Councillor Hamilton Prime?
None, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Okay, for good order, as the presiding member, I believe I'm required to ensure that item 13.1.1 is called up because it involves a financial interest. So again, Councillor Kingston, if you can do that one. And also, we have a absolute majority required on item 13.1.4, again, from a committee recommendation. So, again, Councillor Kingston, if you can extract that one, it would be appreciated. Thank you. Thank you, elected members. So the first item to be extracted tonight is item 12.4. Councillor Fishwick, do you wish to move the motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. My alternate motion, which has been circulated to members, happy to read it out. It's on the board. Thank you.
Thank you. The alternate is before us. Do we have somebody who would second that? That's Councillor Hamilton Prime. Thank you. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The purpose of my motion is to ensure that the city takes active steps to progress the issue of community basketball facilities, which has been stagnating for far too long on the Action Register. Given that this matter has been sitting on the Action Register for 2.5 years, I believe it's time for the council to be proactive and move forward with practical solutions rather than waiting indefinitely for the state guidelines that may never come to fruition, given that the minister put a stop on DEWA releasing them. So firstly, my motion by inserting a clause 2 requesting a report on the progress of the DEWA guidelines for community basketball facilities is pretty straightforward. Since DEWA's draft guidelines were initially discussed as a potential solution following local government sector consultation, the city needs to be updated on its status. It's unacceptable for this issue to remain unresolved, particularly when Councillor May's notice of motion calling for basketball facilities for youth recreation in his ward was adopted nearly 3 years ago in November 2021 and remains near the top of the action register. By seeking an update report from the CO, we can determine whether any progress has been made or if an alternate solutions are needed. My motion at Clause 3 is a necessary follow-up, ensuring that if DEWA is blocked politically by the Minister for the Environment and is unable to officially publicise its guidelines, the city needs to develop its own policy or guidelines for the management of community basketball facilities. While the administration has argued that the city does not have the required expertise to create such a policy or guideline, I must say that I find this reasoning unconvincing. The city regularly engages external consultants when in-house expertise is lacking, and there's no reason sound modelling or other technical advice could not be sourced in the same manner. The administration state that the city can still consider the draft version of the DEWA guidelines and any future project design on a case-by-case basis in the contents of the regulation. Consequently, it seems to me that the work has been done, so therefore by adopting the draft version of the DEWA guidelines as solution for now would provide the city with a practical framework to move forward with basketball facility installations while ensuring that projects align with existing noise regulations. Lastly, without action on these matters, on this motion, the matter risks remaining on the action register for years to come with no tangible progress. My alternate motions provide a clear path forward by using DEWA draft guidelines as a solution for now. This will allow the city to begin developing basketball facilities that meet both community needs and environmental standards. I urge you, therefore, to support these motions to ensure that we can finally address this issue in a timely and effective manner. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Hamilton Prime, the seconder, do you wish to speak on the matter?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'd like to reiterate Councillor Fishwick's comments. I fully support them and strongly support them, considering the surrounding sensitivity in relation to this issue. The community deserves clarity on this important matter, and I hope this can help expedite the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton Prime. Councillor May.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Fishwick, for moving the motion. I was going to second it, but Councillor Hamilton Prime beat me to it, and that's fine. I just wanted to speak in favour of a motion. I'm not usually a fan of having a policy developed for every minor thing. I don't necessarily think we need a policy for this, but DEWA are putting guidelines out soon, but they haven't publicised them yet. And it has been quite some time, and that's not a criticism at all. I understand the resource constraints and the complexities around dealing with certain departments, which may not be the easiest to deal with and get information out of. But we are probably obliged to implement some kind of common sense, simple guideline or policy on this, should do or not release it. Again, I'd rather just common sense prevail, because having policies around minor things like this can just lead to things that's not getting done and costing a lot more time and resources to do something simple like pull a bit of concrete and put a basketball hoop up. But anyway, I fully support the motion, and I encourage elected members to. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the elected members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Pizzi.
Thank you. I just want to say that I'm supporting this motion as well. This issue and lack of report from the state government is holding up a lot of projects and projects in our area, namely Chichester. And, you know, I want these projects to move forward, and I think this is a good plan to do that. So thank you, Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you. To any other elected members? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. I think the reluctance of DEWA to proceed with any draft guidelines about the impact of basketball activity says it all. Unfortunately, this is a very contentious issue. The city has had to deal with this in the past. Determining the actual level of nuisance, the repetitive sound of a bouncing ball can be very annoying, but I think it really depends on who is at the receiving end. Some people are very sensitive about the thumping noise and others aren't. If they've avoided it, I guess we have no alternative to formulate our own regulations about this. So I do support Councillor Fishwick's motion.
Thank you. Councillors, any further commentary on this item? If not, I'll speak myself. So with regard to part two of this alternate, could I ask the responsible city officer to just clarify the officer's comment we have as before us states that the State Government Department of Water and Environmental Regulation will not be proceeding with the draft guidance document minimising noise impact from outdoor community basketball facilities. My question to the city officer is, does that therefore not render part two of this alternate to be futile? Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The background to the DEWA guidelines, the city was asked to consider a draft version and prepare a submission in response to them, which the city did in late 2022, early 2023. During Council's February meeting cycle for that, the Minister for Environment came out and advised that the draft guidelines would no longer be progressed. Council, as it was in the process of making a decision on the city's submission, as part of that resolution also resolved to request that the Minister for Environment and the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation reconsider the decision to no longer progress. I don't believe, to my knowledge, and it's certainly something we're happy to take on notice and follow up for Council, I'm not sure if the Minister for Environment or DEWA have responded to that follow-up request asking them to reconsider. So I think in the absence of that particular resolution, your question would be, my answer to your question would be yes, part two would be redundant, but I think because we're not completely aware at this point in time whether or not the Minister for Environment and DEWA have entirely closed the door on our request to reconsider, I would think that part two would still be applicable and appropriate.
Thank you. And then with regards to part three, I wonder if I could ask for commentary from Director Lee with regard to the appropriateness of the city developing independent guidelines, noting that ultimately we have to comply with noise regulations or laws. How easy is it for us to come up with our own procedures that ensure compliance with the legislation? Thank you.
Thank you, through you, Deputy Mayor. As you mentioned, the city does have an obligation to comply with the legislation that it's bound by. There could still be merit in developing a policy in the absence of the state coming forward and developing one or a policy or a set of guidelines that would apply across all of WA. Whilst we still have an obligation to comply with legislation, there are probably different ways that we can go about doing that, and I think some guidelines or a policy of the city's own could provide some guidance to officers when it comes to designing facilities as to how we would approach a particular issue, and that would then also give some clarity and some comfort to our community when we are proceeding to develop these sort of facilities. There's a nice established policy or guideline or standard that the city can look to and advise community as to why we've approached a particular facility in a particular way.
Thank you, Director Lee, for your responses. So I'm concluding from that that part two would initiate us to check with DWA regarding any possibility of continuing the process of the guidelines, and for part three, it's simply requesting the city to provide a report to council regarding the potential to prepare our own guidelines, so it doesn't involve us actually doing the work at this stage. So thank you for those clarifications. Elected members, any other comments, questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'm just actually wondering from the city, other cities that have adopted their own guidelines, and how have they been met within the public, in the community, with those guidelines?
Thank you, Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, we're not aware if any other local governments have gone it on their own and developed any policy or guidelines. That may be the case, but we're not aware of any, so I'm happy to take that question on notice, and we can undertake a bit more research and provide council with an update.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. Any further elected members wishing to comment? If not, I will foreshadow that in the event that this alternate doesn't get up, then I will be happy to move the primary motion. But having said that, I leave it now to Councillor Fishwick to close. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll be brief. The matter's been hanging around for now nearly 3 years, and we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're actually going to, if this motion succeeds, we're actually going to use the DWA guidelines, which have been endorsed pretty much by the sector and WALGA, as our guidelines or policy for the installation of basketball pads. So I think it's been sitting here for 3 years. We need to progress this, so I'd ask you to support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. We'll therefore be voting now on the alternate proposed by Councillor Fishwick. That's on the screen before you. Elected members, please cast your votes on the screens before you. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and the item is carried. The alternate is carried. Councillor Fishwick, could you please nominate a reason for the departure from the officer's recommendation?
The city developing its own guidelines will enable the installation of basketball pads within our district to proceed, given the taking cognizance of the environmental impacts and noise regulations. Thank you.
Can I check with the administration whether they're happy with that reason? Okay, thank you, Councillor Fishwick. The next item extracted is 12.6, status of petitions. Councillor Kingston, do you wish to move?
Yes, can I move the alternate that was circulated?
Can I just check with you when that was circulated?
It was circulated today.
Today, okay.
So the governance team appears to have it on the screen.
Okay, and okay. Do we have a seconder for that alternate? Councillor Rafters. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. The alternate that's been circulated just adds three extra sections onto the officer's recommendations. So if we can scroll to those. So that adds an 8.3, an 8.4, and an 8.5. 8.3 is to first request the Western Australian Planning Commission to provide reasons for the approval of the development application relating to the monopole. For those councillors that were at the briefing session, we received a informative presentation by Mr. Kim Allen, one of the residents in Ocean Reef, regarding the community impacts on the monopole and how that has come to be approved. The next element adds 8.4, which is to request ACMA, which is the Australian Communications and Media Authority, to engage in EME sampling at the particular site. And this is also responding to the issues that have been raised in the community and also at the deputation on Tuesday last week, is that when this particular telecommunications infrastructure was proposed, there was a certain number of services which were to be included onto the monopole. That's nearly doubled between what was in the development application and what is now being what is now publicly available on the register of radio communications licenses on ACMA's website. So it now sits at 136 services on the monopole, which is nearly double. The third point of this alternate adds an 8.5, which is to request the state government to investigate options to relocate the telecommunications services. Again, is that Ocean Reef Marina, when this was proposed as a project, is meant to be a landmark development in Ocean Reef, and the inclusion of the monopole in this area has provoked concerns, firstly around amenity with the proximity to the telecommunications infrastructure itself, visual amenity, and as was demonstrated at the briefing session as well, and this will be in everyone's notes from the briefing session, is that it appears that the images which were presented as part of the development application, the concept images, and then what has actually been built, it appears there's some type of difference between the two, and that there are opportunities that the state can relocate the services that are on this monopole to other locations. It would involve some negotiation with the private companies involved, but that's something that if the state wished to take that up, that they could look into it. So there has been some officers' comments on 8.3, 8.4 and 8.5. 8.3, at this stage, I believe that the planning director has already sent a letter to the Western Australian Planning Commission asking for clarifications for the development proposal. So that is very similar to 8.3, which is proposed. And the reason why I've included this, even though that letter has been sent, is I think it's important that when we have a petition from the community, which is how this has arisen, that the officers have engaged in engaged with the department to try and understand how this has occurred, and I think it's important we support our officers in those investigations. So the officer's comment was that 8.3 in some ways is potentially underway, but I think we should support the officers by including it in the notice, including it in the motion here. 8.4, which is to engage in testing of the site, this was also support. This was supported by the officers. The comments were circulated, and I think this is an important point given the significant change in the services which were in the development application and are now being provided at the infrastructure. And of course, 8.5 relates to the relocation itself, which I've touched on. So one of the key issues which brought this to the community's attention is that for the area of which this monopole has been developed is a 4-metre height limit within the Ocean Reef Marina Development Scheme, and this is a 35-metre monopole. And it seems to suggest that, at least the text of the improvement scheme, is that if there's a significant departure from what is the building requirements that are in the scheme, there should have been community consultation. And now that 35-metre monopole's been approved in that area, most residents didn't learn about this till after it had been approved. In fact, till after they actually saw the construction being commenced, because they were not notified and they were not consulted. So this is about trying to do our due diligence to investigate and see what options there are and see what impacts there are for the community. So I hope everyone can support it.
Thank you, bang on time. Councillor Raftis, a second, did you wish to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Look, certainly support the changes. I think they've been
well presented, and I think they'll have a positive outcome if we're able to deliver on some of the information. Particularly, I'd like to have the ACMA engage in some sampling on there, and to ensure that the providers who are relying on self-reporting actually are doing the right thing, and particularly with this going to be a very large development in that area, to be able to satisfy the information needs of the residents in that area. I think it's important. It's an area of concern for people these days, and I think having the additional information would be good. The last one, in terms of the exceeding the limits of development, yeah, I think we need to be concerned around, is this a indication of further excessive development over and above limits that are set in this area. So I think it's a good thing to actually take some steps to focus on this one and see where it goes from here. Thank you.
Thank you. I will speak myself at the moment. I'll first start off with some just flagging my intention to that I will foreshadow the primary motion if the alternate doesn't get up. But I wanted to also, given that this alternate was only submitted today, and in fact the officer's comments were only circulated to elected members, I think, an hour or so before the meeting. I just think, in all fairness, and apologies to Director Lee, but I would ask that if Director Lee could possibly read out one by one each of the officer's comments so that we can be sure that all elected members are aware of them. You can start, first of all, with item 8.3, the officer's comment, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Through you, Deputy Mayor. The officer comment in response to 8.3 is, it is noted that the City has already written to the West Australian Planning Commission seeking information on the basis for the approval of the telecommunications infrastructure, including the decision not to undertake public consultation as part of the process. The correspondence sent by the City to the WAPC has been shared with elected members. To date, the City has not received a response. However, the City will share the response from the WAPC when it has been received. Based on the above, it is considered this aspect of the alternate motion has already been satisfied and therefore is not supported. In relation to...
Thank you. I'll just separate them out. So we'll, having covered 8.3, we'll never cover 8.4. Thank you.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In relation to 8.4, the officer comment states... The City has written to the Australian Communications and Media Authority seeking information on how compliance with the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency radio frequency standard is monitored. On the 16th of September 2024, the ACMA provided a response outlining that the carrier is responsible for monitoring compliance with the limits in the standard and the mobile phone base station deployment code. ACMA also outlined that they undertake a range of compliance activities in relation to electromagnetic emissions, health and safety, including site audits and measurement studies. The public can view the EME measurement data the ACMA collects on their website. Residents can also seek advice from the ARPANSA, who can provide expert information about electromagnetic radiation and EME health and safety. Local residents are able to, can talk with them via their talk to a scientist service or by telephone. The City will share the response from the ACMA with elected members and local residents later this week. Given that the ACMA has confirmed they undertake a range of compliance activities in relation to EME emissions, including site audits and measurement studies, it is considered appropriate that a request be made to the ACMA to undertake specific sampling for the Ocean Reef Marina telecommunications infrastructure, and therefore this aspect of the alternate motion is supported.
Thanks very much, Director Lee. If we can move on to the officer's comments on item 8.5. Thank you.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In relation to item 8.5, the officer comments states the proponent of the telecommunications infrastructure is a private entity, Amplitel. Whilst the West Australian Planning Commission granted development approval for the telecommunications infrastructure, it is not clear what ability or influence the state government could have in investigating the relocation of the telecommunications infrastructure, given the planning approval has been issued and that the proponent for the development is a private entity, Amplitel. As such, this aspect of the alternate motion is not supported.
Thank you, Director Lee. My only other comment would be that to flag my intention to actually have the voting on these items separated out, so we potentially vote for 8.1 and 8.2 being the primary motion, firstly, followed by 8.3, 8.4 and 8.5 individually. That would be my intention. Any other elected members? I think Councillor Pizzi.
I was just going to request that we vote separately, and we're going to ask a few questions that are now clarified. Thank you, Director Lee.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Pizzi. Would any other elected members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Injula.
Yeah, I just want to make a brief statement. I'm just perplexed why we've got this amendment at 5 p.m. when the city admin has already clearly addressed these items. I just am perplexed by it all.
Maybe you want to convert that in question to a question to governments and ask if that is allowable?
I would just like to ask the city admin if they believe that this has already been pre-addressed and wasn't required.
So I take that there's no question. We'll move on to Councillor Chester. Thank you.
Yes, while appreciating that these towers can be an eyesore, on the other hand, we all want adequate phone coverage. I guess that's all I want to say. It's easy to discount locations, but we do need phone coverage in emergencies, so it's a compromise, as always.
Any other elected members wishing to comment or ask questions on this item?
Sorry, would I be able to ask one more question?
Yes, that's available. Councillor Pizzi.
Just in relation to 8.3, you stated that the WAPC has not replied yet. When they do reply, would you be able to provide their reply to the council and to the petitioner involved in this instance?
I'll take that as a question through the chair, and I'll direct that to Director Lee. Thank you.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, that would be our intent. Once we receive a response from the WAPC, we would share it with elected members and then also relevant local residents, and that would, off the top of my head, likely be the lead petitioner as well as a group of local residents that we've met with specifically on this issue.
Anything further from any elected members? If not, I will revert to Councillor Kingston, but I would actually just highlight to the mover and the seconder, just to make sure we're all clear on the motion that we're actually that's been moved, which is the complete recommendation for all of the items under this, and that the alternate only covers the additional 8.3, 8.4, and 5, which is part of item 8. So there are 9 separate recommendations. So I just wanted to double check with the seconder and the mover that your alternate is the entire motion with those additional items. Councillor Rufter, are you clear on that? Okay, so the officer's recommendation for this item, which is the status of petitions, has a total of 9 recommendations with some sub-recommendations within them, and Councillor Kingsland's alternate motion is to add 3 additional, if you like, bullet points to item 8, which covers a petition relating to this matter. Is that clear? Thank you. Councillor Kingston, please bear that in mind. When you do your closing comments, you're welcome to add a clarification to that and confirming your understanding. Thank you.
Yes, it was an alternate which also included the rest of the officer's comments. So I will be seeking, as the Deputy Mayor has indicated, to vote on 8.3, 8.4 and 8.5 separately. To first respond to Councillor Chester about, yes, we do need telecommunications infrastructure. I think everyone in this room has a phone on them. However, it's about, is it in the right location and is it appropriate for the setting and the site? So this isn't saying there shouldn't be telecommunications infrastructure. It's saying that it should be more appropriately located. And there are locations to be able to do that within the Ocean Reef Marine Precinct. That can be done on the Sea Sports Building, which actually is going to have a lattice on top. And so the telecommunications infrastructure, I think, in my opinion, should have been preferably located on there or onto the navigation pole, which already exists at the site. So this is not saying there shouldn't be telecommunications infrastructure. This is saying it should be more appropriately located. To respond to Councillor Venciullo about, first of all, I think concerns about lateness of the motion, I would refer him to the briefing session notes and page 16, which the intention of this alternate was raised, and nearly the exact wording of this particular alternate. So this was raised at the briefing session on Tuesday last week, and yes, with very similar wordings for the alternate. So is this already being dealt with by the administration? I would say no. And the reason why I say that is you could argue point 8.3, that we have had some correspondence with the Planning Commission. They've not responded to us yet. 8.4, clearly, as even the director has suggested, has not occurred because there hasn't been any sampling that's been undertaken. So, no, I don't think that's already occurring, number four. And as number five, is that already occurring? Again, no, it's not, unless there is a discussion to... unless there is a desire to enter into a discussion to relocate the services, I think quite clearly that's not happening at the present either. So to respond to those concerns individually, but to respond generally, is that many of these residents only found out the day in which the infrastructure was actually put out. They looked out their window, and suddenly it appeared. The Planning Commission, through their determination, decided that public consultation did not need to occur at this location, and that's what's precipitated this community petition and the concerns around it. So I would encourage everyone to consider the concerns from the residents, and we had quite a significant and informative presentation on Tuesday last week, which went through these concerns and ways to remedy them. This reflects the desire of the community on how to remedy those. So I'd encourage everyone to support it, and I hope that I've been able to adequately respond to those councillors who have had concerns about this.
Thank you, Councillor Kingston. So for clarity, the first thing we're going to vote on is point 8.3 as a standalone item. So just as a reminder, this vote is only on item 8.3 of the alternate. Requests that Western Australia Planning Commission provide reasons for the approval of the development application for the telecommunications monopole. Elected members, if you can vote on that item alone, cast the votes using the screens before you. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and that part of the alternate is carried. We now move on to part 8.4. Requests the Australian Communications and Media Authority to engage in EME sampling at the Ocean Reef site given the increase of services from what was stated in the development approval. We'll just wait for the voting screens. There we are, part 8.4. Councillors, if you can cast your vote on part 8.4. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and that item is carried. We now move on to part 8.5. Request the state government to investigate the relocation of the telecommunications services to other existing or planned structures. Councillors, please vote using the screens before you. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and that part of the alternate is carried. Okay, so just to reiterate, parts 8.3, 8.4 and 8.5 have all been carried. We're therefore going to now vote on the amended motion, which captures those three. So this is the entire motion, covering items 1 to 9, including item 8 with those alternates. Is everybody clear? So just to be clear, this is the remainder of the motion. So we've already voted on 8.3, 8.4 and 8.5. So we're now voting on every other part of this motion, which was on the original agenda. All clear? Councillors, please cast your votes using the screens before you. I declare the voting closed and the item is carried unanimously. Thank you. Councillor Kingston, could you please provide an explanation for the divergence from the officer's recommendation?
Thank you. To respond to community issues arising from the development approval.
And can I check with governance that they're happy with that? Thank you. Next item is 12.7, the Coastal Hazard Risk Management and Adaptation Plan, Project Plan and Community Reference Group Terms of Reference. Councillor Pizzi, would you like to move this item?
Yes, please.
And do we have a seconder? Councillor Kingston? Okay, Councillor Pizzi.
Thank you. I appreciate the statements made tonight by our community members about the CRG to have input on the development of a new CHAR map. I think it is a positive step forward, and I applaud the City on listening to the community feedback, and I'm looking forward to being able to listen to and benefit from the collective expertise and knowledge that our community members have and can share during the process of the development of the new CHAR map. I also note that it does not exclude the extension of the CIG either in the form it is in or in another if it is required at a later time. Again, thank you to the City and the community who have been activated and invested in improving future plans for our coastline areas.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston, do you wish to speak as seconder?
I'll reserve my right at this stage.
Thank you. Elected members, would anybody else like to speak on this item? Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just to concur Councillor Pizzi's comments and also acknowledge that the community has shown significant patience on this particular and important and very sensitive issue, and that we appreciate it, and also acknowledging the City Officer's hard work. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor May.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I concur with the Officer's recommendations and the comments previously made. I'd just like to add, back when this item first came to Council quite some time ago, I strongly supported the draft document going out to consultation, which included the recommendation for groins, as we all know. I consider that process to be a success, and the response to be a success in my view, particularly as personally I don't want to see groins constructed. And the strong feedback from that consultation, with many thousands of responses, really gave us as a council a formal voice and formal pressure, I suppose, if you want to use that word, to proceed with creating a community reference group. So I consider that process so far to be a success, and I support the officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, elected members. Anybody else would like to speak? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just a query, in terms of the stakeholder groups, do we have the City of Stirling and City of Wanneroo as key stakeholders in this process?
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, the City of Wanneroo and City of Stirling is part of our Northern Coastal Alliance group, which will be one of the key stakeholders in development of the new CHAR map.
Councillor Raftus. Any other elected members wishing to speak on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you to the officers for preparing this project report and putting it publicly in the agenda. There's elements of it which, you know, there's always elements which people can say there can be improvements on. But I guess to respond to some of the concerns I've raised to the community and why I will be supporting this as it is currently is that, for me, one of the concerns which arose was around ensuring that the community reference group is an open-ended process and there's the opportunity for members of the public to communicate and contribute in a way that's so that we can have an outcome that is representative of the community. And that's important in my mind, is that given the quantum of money which was proposed to be involved under the previous draft CHAR map at $120 million, I think it's important that we get the community consultation and the reference group right. And after the briefing session last week, I felt positive about the responses from the relevant manager around the openness, which hopefully we'll be able to achieve through the reference group in terms of reference. One of the elements which I thought was important is that the reference group be able to refer questions or matters, especially questions, to the technical group for them to be able to be discussed. That was answered in the affirmative that is something that could be done. And I think it's important also to note at this stage that the work plan which the reference group will be required to look at is not something that's yet been endorsed by council. So after this process, from what I understand, that there'll be a further report, and out of that there'll be a work plan. And I think at that stage, that's the important part in which, as a council, we need to look at how can we ensure that there is that collaborative approach and bringing in the different stakeholders. So as far as the community reference group, that's the part in which I've had some concerns about. Of course, there is the financial aspect, about $30,000 a year, about whether that should be a process that is wholly independent or partly independent, which is what we do with the strategic community reference group currently, and that has a lower financial impact to the city. But I think that's something that we can work out maybe closer to the appointment of the actual members of the reference group and how it'll function with the work plan. I would prefer a similar model to how we have the strategic community reference group, so it's not $30,000 a year, and I imagine a consultant would then be around $7,000 per session, which just seems to be expensive. As far as the project plan itself, the timeline itself is helpful. I think it's positive that the final drafting of the CHAR map will be occurring at the end of the project plan once the state planning policy has been updated. So I think there has been some thought that's given to that. I hope that going through this process with the work plan that the council will prepare for the reference group and the community engagement strategy, that will start to flesh out a lot of the elements which are not included in the project plan currently. So how the community will be engaged, how, because today I received a message from someone having concerns about the scope of works and the consortium of experts which would be brought in. And I hope that's something as we develop the community engagement strategy and through the community reference group process, we can deal with those concerns rather than trying to sort everything out at the front end at the moment. So I see very much this project plan. I do acknowledge the concerns which I've had from the community that it is in some ways light on, but I see it as a framework which more elements are going to be built on and included into it. So hopefully as this project proceeds that we'll be able to get to it. And I think it's important that we do commence looking for members of the reference group and start moving forward on this, is that in areas such as Mullaloo Beach, the beaches are creasing. It's not so much of a direct concern in the short term, but as far as other areas that are north of, say, Ocean Reef Marina, there is constant erosion that's occurring. There are some areas in the city which are worsening. So I think if we can start moving towards that engagement and then start scoping out how the overall project will work on the tail end, I think that'll be important. But I believe that there'll be more reports presented to council and then through the stakeholder engagement plan, which I believe will be the first element which the reference group will be considering. So I hope that's something that's comprehensive, that we can give confidence to the community that we are trying to do this in a way that's going to work out.
Thank you, Councillor Kingston. Elected members, does anybody else wish to comment further on this item? If not, I'll go to Councillor Pizzi. Do you wish to close? Thank you.
Thank you. Just briefly, I think this is a good outcome for the community and their concerns with the charm up and the groins, and is going to create community engagement, and we'll be using the expertise of our community members within the group, and that expertise will be delivered straight to the city and councillors. So I'm looking forward to this beginning, and I hope that everyone will support it.
Thank you. Just for the benefit of elected members and the gallery, the electronic voting system has gone down. And given that it's out of action, we'll do this vote by a show of hands. So just to be clear, we're voting on item 12.7 and the recommendation in the agenda. Everybody clear? If everybody's clear, then please, by a show of hands, indicate if you're voting to support the recommendation before us.
We need to count. Six. Unanimous.
Thank you, elected members. I declare the voting closed and it's carried unanimously. Thank you. We now move all the way through to item 13.1.1. This is a report of the Policy Committee regarding draft alfresco spaces. Councillor Hutton, you have a declaration of financial interest on this item. Councillor Kingston is chair of the Policy Committee. Would you like to move this?
Yes, I will move it as written.
Thank you. Do you have a seconder for that? Councillor Hamilton Prime. Councillor Kingston.
I don't want to speak to this one at length. I think we're withdrawing just because there's a financial interest, but this goes to simplifying a number of the requirements that are currently in place for alfresco dining. I think it's important to note that this focuses mostly on the simplification aspects. There is a proposal to decrease the initial application fees and then ongoing application fees. I think that's something we just need to look at carefully about how we stimulate business or whether we do have those figures correct. But as far as what's in front of us is mostly related to simplifying the process to make it easier for businesses in the CBD to have alfresco dining. So I'd encourage everyone to support them.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime, a seconder.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. I think this is a win for local Duloc businesses within our jurisdiction, slashing some of the red tape, and I think make it more simpler for businesses to take advantage of alfresco dining spaces in our beautiful city. Thank you.
Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I can't speak highly enough of this new policy. I can recall former Councillor Russ Fiswick raising this probably about 10 years ago. And there was always uncertainty. Businesses that operated in the CBD and other shopping centres throughout our city put chairs and tables out to expand their businesses, as they should be encouraged to do. But there was always some uncertainty about whether it was appropriate. Well, it's been defined now. Long time coming, but finally arrived, and I'm sure businesses out there that have an intention to expand into the public domain, namely cross pathways and verges, providing it's done according to the new policy, they will welcome this as an absolute boon to their businesses, and I can't commend it highly enough that we've finally got it in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Jester. Just for the record, people are listening, people in the gallery, I think you inadvertently referred to Councillor Fisherick as former Councillor Fisherick. It may be my ears, but I can assure everybody that he's very much here with us tonight as a sitting elected member. Councillor Ventura.
Yes, I just want to concur with the rest of my fellow councillors. Can't strongly recommend this going through. More importantly, we talk about activating our city, being innovative, being bold, and taking the next steps, and this is just natural progression of all that. I'm highly encouraged by this, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to speak on this item? Not Councillor Kingston. Do you wish to close? No. Okay. Is the system up again? No. So, elected members, we're going to be voting on a show of hands. So this is item 13.1.1, proposed revisions to the Alfresco Activities Local Planning Policy and Draft Alfresco Spaces Guidelines. We're voting by hands on the recommendation before us. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and carried unanimously. Could I ask the administration to call Councillor Hutton? Thank you. The next item before us is item 13.1.2, proposed revocation of Greenwood Local Structure Plan and Amendment to Local Planning Scheme Number 3. This was a policy committee item, so I'm going to give the opportunity to Councillor Kingston to move the motion, but I'm mindful, Councillor Chester, that I'm going to give you the opportunity to second it. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you.
Would you like to move this motion?
Yes, I'll move it as written.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder for this, please? Councillor Chester, thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. This is a rather straightforward item, as it's been through the Council previously and the Policy Committee previously. It's the revocation of the Structure Plan, which is the planning control document for this particular area in Greenwood. Much of the area has now been fully developed, so the Structure Plan itself, its purpose sort of becomes much more limited. So at this stage, what's being sought is that the Structure Plan's revoked and the planning controls be then transferred from the structure plan document itself into the planning scheme. So this doesn't mean that there's no controls on the site. It means that there's very similar, if not identical, controls will be retained for these lots. So I'd encourage everyone to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Chester, do you wish to speak as a seconder?
I do indeed. There were two elements in the existing structure plan which concerned me, and I did clarify with the city that they would remain after the policy structure plan was revoked. These two elements, in fact, were the vegetated buffer zone. If councillors would like to look at page 544 in the attachments, they'll see the elements I'm referring to. On the southern boundary of the area that the structure plan covers, you'll see that the new dwellings have a vegetated buffer zone between the new houses and the old dwellings. But that will remain, as will the quite heavily vegetated public open space in the middle of the Greenwood development. That will remain, and the most important point, it was originally intended to be accessible to the public, not just the new residents within the development. And so it remains really as a northern extension of Cochran Park. So these two elements will remain even without the old structure plan, and I commend it to fellow elected members. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any other elected members wish to comment on this item? No, Councillor Kingston, do you wish to close? No. Can I just check with administration if the voting system's up? No. So again, we're going to be voting by a show of hands, just to be clear. We're voting on item 13.1.2, proposed revocation of Greenwood Local Structure Plan and Amendment to Local Planning Scheme Number 3, and we're voting with regard to support for the recommendation before us. Can I ask elected members to vote by a show of hands? Thank you. The voting is closed and carried unanimously. Next item is 13.1.4, proposed parking amendment local law. So just a reminder that this has been extracted by myself because it requires an absolute majority. However, as a policy committee item, I leave it to Councillor Kingston to advise if he's happy to move this motion.
Yes, I am.
Thank you. And do we have a seconder? Councillor Vinciullo, thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just briefly again, this item has previously been in front of the Council and the Policy Committee. It's the parking local law. It previously went through advertising and was put to the Joint Standing Committee for Delegated Legislation in the Parliament, at which there were some textual issues which have now been resolved, and there's been some minor improvements and amendments to it as well. Now that that's been done, unfortunately, it means that we do need to re-advertise the parking local law again before we can then resubmit it to the Joint Standing Committee. So I'd encourage the other council members to support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Ventura, a seconder?
Nothing to add, thank you.
Any further elected members wishing to comment on this item? Councillor Hunt.
Just the general comment. Last time when this was advertised on social media for the city, there was a lot of commentary from locals, particularly around the cost of parking, which obviously isn't directly relevant. It would be worthwhile for the administration to reflect on these previous comments and proactively maybe provide clarity whenever we do the next round of consultation. That's all the comment. Otherwise, I support this motion.
Thank you. Do any of the elected members wish to speak on this item? If not, Councillor Kingston, do you wish to close?
Just to say one thing, it's hard always to try and predict what the Joint Standing Committee will do, so I'd just like to thank the administration's patience on preparing this and then resubmitting it in this form. So, thank you.
Thank you. Elected members, I still believe that the voting system is down, so we're going to be voting by show of hands. Just to be clear, we're voting on item 13.1.4, the proposed parking amendment local law 2024, and we're voting as to whether we support the recommendation before us. By show of hands. Thank you. I declare the voting closed and the item is carried unanimously. We now move on to item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review. As a policy committee item, it's for Councillor Kingston. Are you happy to move this motion?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. And do we have a seconder? Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you.
Councillor Kingston, please.
Thank you. I think this one's been withdrawn because the Councillor Raftus has an alternate which she's pursuing on this one. As far as the discussion that as it went through the policy committee, I think councillors will remember the previous discussion about the costs which were being incurred under the previous report, where it was considered, I believe, roughly about 50% of a level 7 employee, which was around 40 or 50,000. That's now been, according to the budget implications, changed. As far as my concerns, I supported bringing this to the council meeting. As far as the arguments from the SAR groups, I think one thing which would help members of the community is ensuring that there is a clearer delineation between what is a SAR responsibility and what is not. And I think in the community sometimes there's an element of confusion around that. As far as some of the claims that are on page 164, personally I view it as it's hard to separate out to what degree a SAR does bring value to an area. I think that there is an argument that a SAR does bring area, but to what extent is always a harder figure to actually try and tie down. I can see that there's been an attempt of trying to get advice from real estate agents, but comparing one suburb to another is hard. I think on the face of it, though, it does appear that there is an increase to the general rate which does occur from an area that then is from an area that has better landscape and is improved. But then also I think equally is a question about how is then it best to apportion any financial budget or implications from a SAR policy. So at this stage, as far as a personal sense. I'll be asking the presiding member if he can separate out the voting on items 1, 2, and 3. I'll be supporting 2, so that's to adopt the, personally, the SAR policy as amended. That's in attachment 2. I won't be supporting 1, and the reason for that is that I've got a consistent position, which I don't believe in entrenching council decisions. Whether it's on SARS or any other matter, we've had discussions about entrenchment on, at least what I would consider entrenchment, is where you have a policy that states something, and then on top of that, you then have a council decision that states something as well. I think if you have a policy, to me, that's sufficient. There's been a similar discussion previously about, if my recollection is correct, everything from international travel to other types of expenses or services. So I think the policy itself should determine what the council's policy is. I don't think we need a council decision to say what the council's policy is when you've got a policy. So I won't be supporting number 1, but I'll be supporting number 2 at this stage. So I just ask if those could be separated out. But I'll respond to discussion as well.
So just to clarify, you wanted points 1 and 2 separated out?
Just really number 1 separately voted on.
Okay, thank you. A second, Councillor Hamilton-Prime.
Was that my right? Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to comment on this item? Councillor Rafters.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move the alternate that was circulated, please.
One moment. Councillor Rafters, I'm just going to call on Director of Government, Director Parry, just to comment on that. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, we all have we have a motion in front of us for does not support the inclusion as number 1. An alternate or an amendment in accordance with 912 of the meeting procedures provides that any amendment must be relevant to the primary motion to which it's moved, but must not have the effect of negating the primary motion. So the alternate motion, as suggested by Councillor Raftus, would negate that particular motion. It might be suggested that foreshadow the motion that he has considered for inclusion in this agenda.
Councillor Raftus?
I'm somewhat taken aback, considering I moved this, notified this alternate at the briefing session, and yet a process was taken to not give this to me to start with. So, it's a concern for me. In which part is...
Sorry, just one second. You just made some comments, and I'd just like Director Parry to respond to those comments. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, it would be Councillor Raftus is correct in one part that this was raised as part of the briefing session, that he put forward his intent to move the alternate motion and sought advice from the administration, again with a slight amendment to it, which was, to my knowledge, distributed to all elected members yesterday. It would be normal par for the course for elected members in accordance with the endorsed protocol in relation to amendments and alternates that Councillor Raftus be given the opportunity to move the item rather than offered the opportunity to move the item first. However, Councillor Kingston has moved and it's been seconded the committee recommendation to the council, and that's why it hasn't proceeded in the way in which it was anticipated.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus.
Can I seek clarification, please, on which part does not meet the requirements? Does it all three parts of the alternate or just particularly one?
Fritz Perry.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, in the main part one, the current recommendation is does not support, and the proposal from yourself is to support, which is considered to be the effect of negating that primary motion.
Councillor Raftus?
If I drop part one and keep two and three, which are the references to the alternate policy and guidelines, is that acceptable?
Fritz Perry?
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, sorry. It would apply to recommendation two as well, because you are referring to different policies. One is the revised, and the other one excludes the administration cost, and the other one includes the administration cost.
Councillor Raftus.
Well, I guess I will have to keep it there as an option should the first one fail. In that case, in which case I will speak on the item as it is presented. It's an interesting one where we get to, where earlier this year there was a very strong support from the administration, well, a support from the administration to recoup the administration costs from the SAR groups. It came to the policy committee earlier this year, and the policy committee sought obviously some input from the SAR groups as part of that process to do things the right way, and then have that engagement. Interestingly, came back now to have a complete change of stance on the matter, and all based upon just the evidence provided by SAR groups, or in fact comments or opinions from the SAR groups, as opposed to any form of strong evidence that's been ratified by the administration. So that's where I am at the moment. I don't believe we've ratified any of these claims that have been made. Also, in terms of some of the comments around the tennis courts in the Harbour Rise area, well, those tennis courts are maintained by the city. The McCubbin Park Pond, I believe in April 2022, the council signed off on spending $140,000 to improve the iron filter and improve the quality of that pond. So there's significant amounts of money that the city is spending in these areas that are covered by the greater ratepayers. So the reference to these, the benefits purely coming from the SAR groups, I don't think is necessarily correct. Also the reference that pretty much the claim by the real estate agents that the entire increased value of these properties is because of they're in SARs. I think it's a fairly strong claim to make. I'm not sure how it's justified. There's a claim around $700,000 in additional rates, and this is not the additional rates collected. That's the $725,000, which is referenced higher in the report. But when I sought a response for this from the briefing session last week, the response on the $700K was given was, in effect, what makes up the $725. So we didn't actually get a response on this evidence, and there is no evidence. So other than claims made by real estate agents, unjustified. No support. I don't see any reference that covers it. So,
Councillor Raftus, are you seeking an extension of time?
Yes, please, if I may.
Let your members by a show of hands on providing an extension of 5 minutes for Councillor Raftus. Just keep your hands raised so we have a count. Thank you. Happy? Thank you. That's your members. Councillor Raftus, you may continue.
Yes, thank you. So, from my point of view, is we're advised that the city's recommendation is based upon the best technical advice available.
Sorry, just bear with me, Councillor Raftus. Sorry. Yes, thank you. Just regarding the extension of time, councillors, we just need a mover and a seconder for that extension. Moved by Councillor Kingston, seconded by Councillor Pizzi. Thank you. Councillors, by a show of hands, for the extension of 5 minutes. Thank you. Apologies, Councillor Raftus. Please continue.
Thank you. Yes, in terms of best technical advice, in terms of assisting with the decision-making process, I'm not clear on where that technical advice is in terms of this report. I don't see any real support that enables me to back the officer's recommendation to not claim and not seek some recovery of administration costs from the SAR groups. There's a lot of effort that goes into it. I've been attended meetings at the Harbour Eyes in previous years where a couple of staff came along and presented quite in-depth reports to the association there. Very impressive, professional, and obviously well supported by the city, these groups are. So I think it's justified to recoup some of the money. I think that those funds would go to delivering other benefits for other ratepayers as well. So I think the SAR groups do well with the city. I know I'm not arguing they don't provide some benefit for the city, but I don't think they should not provide some sort of contribution towards the administration costs that goes towards running these areas. And certainly $725,000 of contracts is a significant amount of work and would require some level of support to enable that to be effectively delivered. So, in which case, I don't support not recouping the internal administration costs, and I would argue that we don't vote with the current one and we'll put an alternate through following this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Raftus. Do any other elected members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm actually looking at page 186 in tonight's report where it indicates that because of the extra funds dedicated to the SARS area, the value of a general usually increases gross rental values on those properties. And, of course, that subsequently leads to increased rates revenue. I don't think we can ignore that fact, and I accept the officer's explanation that it really offsets any extra administrative costs. So I will be going with the original recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you, Councillor Chester kind of beat me to it. I concur with his sentiment 100%. And share his views. In addition to that, I'd like to just put forth that the real estate agents involved in this process know intimately the suburbs and the impacts and the benefits that come from that. To dismiss industry professionals that are providing valuable input into the impact that these areas provide would be remiss. And I will categorically be supporting the administration on this one.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime, let's sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I too would like to concur Councillor Ventura's comments. I too have the similar opinion that I support the officer's recommendation in full. SARS provide a significant benefit to the people who live within the SARS, and they pay a significant amount of rates for that. And I think that is lost in what's happening in the discussion here, is that they do pay a significant amount of rates in proportion to other ratepayers. And they pay to have those extra benefits, and they pay for it. I think they provide an important uplift to the community. A classic example is the Harbour Eyes Homeowners Association. Isn't it a fantastic SAR? It's the jewel, one of the many jewels of the city's crown. And to be right near the second top tourist destination within Western Australia, it does our city very proud to have Harbour Eyes in a very publicly viewable area and shows how fantastic our city is. And they do a lot of work. It's a very engaged community organisation that does a lot more than just have committee meetings and AGMs. They are very involved. We wouldn't have had the Whitford's Node staircase if it wasn't for their continued advocacy and support of our city and our ambitions as a city and a council. It wouldn't be there today. So without that advocacy they do provide on many levels, we would be a very much a lesser city for it. In terms of the fantastic work they do, I think, tonight it speaks for itself, the comments that were given from the gallery. And I'd like to thank the SARS committee members for coming and saying their views to council. I think I definitely take heed to what they say and obviously appreciate the city officers and their extensive work that they have done in the whole process of reviewing this policy. I'd like to say in terms of the comments regarding the real estate agents, surely we make decisions based on the best available data. That is raw, hard data there, councillors, and I'm making my decision fully informed based on that data.
Thank you. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I will also be supporting the administration and the Iluka Housing Association.
Thank you. Councillor May.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just a couple of points in addition to what's already been made. The city absorbs costs for a lot of various groups and for a lot of locations. A few locations I can think of are Tom Simpson Park in Mullaroo, which is maintained to a high standard, probably comparable to a SAR, especially the higher maintenance required for a coastal area. Another location being the park area at Sorrento Beach, Whitford's nodes. These are major draw cards of the city and they receive a higher level of service than a quiet suburban park, for example, and those costs are absorbed by the administration. Furthermore, I think residents' associations in general can request that a city officer attend a meeting and provide information after hours. I know that's happened in one instance for an association I was involved in a number of years ago. That's not just limited to SARS as well. Another example is the city absorbs the costs, the administrative costs of, for example, questions on notice. There may be some residents who submit questions every month, and that's fine, and people are entitled to do that, but there's an administrative cost to doing that as well. I don't really think we should be singling out one group for something for covering administrative costs when pretty much everywhere else it's absorbed within the overall budget. And lastly, I'd like to also say that SARS not only benefit the immediate location where they're located, but surrounding homes that may be a street or two outside of a SAR or even a surrounding suburb does benefit from them. They have access to the parks and the public spaces and the benefits to the presentation of the suburb as a whole. I would say off topic that I'd love to see a situation where we could be more SARs. When I was a councillor for Kallaroo, I would have always liked North Shore in Kallaroo to be one, for example. But the process is quite long and convoluted, but that's a discussion for another time. So I support the officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Pissy.
Just a quick comment that I also agree with the recommendation. I think the costs of the SARs are recuperated well and truly by the increased GRV that is created through the upkeep of the area. So I'll also be supporting the motion as it is.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to comment on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I was just wondering if the city could please once again, as I have forgotten, could the city please reiterate which councillors have signed declarations in relation to this item and what they were for?
Director Parry.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I have one from Councillor May. Committee members of Woodvale Waters Land Association and Harbour Rise Association are known to him. And that's an interest that affects impartiality. Councillor Hamilton Prime, the interest that may affect impartiality is the SARS committee members of Harbour Rise Homeowners Association are known to her. Councillor Vinciullo, interest that may affect impartiality, SARS committee members of Harbour Rise are known to him. Councillor Hutton, interest that may affect impartiality, is a former member of the Burns Beach Residents Association Committee. Councillor Hill, interest that may affect impartiality, is a resident of the Burns Beach SAR area and a former chairperson of Burns Beach Residents Association, currently a member of Burns Beach Residents Association. And that is it, unless I've missed any.
Thank you, Director Parry. Councillor O'Neill.
Nothing further on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to speak on this item? Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd just like to follow on with some of the comments made by Councillor May. I'm personally on the record as previously stating that I would love to see more areas become a SAR in our city. I guess I come from the unique situation where I do have an interest in the sense that I used to be a member of the Brunswick Residents Association Committee, a committee which spent years actively campaigning to become a SAR, going through a process which was very, very difficult, a process which has been amended over time. I do reflect on the hundreds upon hundreds of hours that the Residents Association would spend managing this process, and we haven't obviously factored that into these costs, but the volunteer hours involved in this would be substantially more than the administrative hours involved. These are members of the city who are actively contributing to making their area be as nice a place as possible to live. In terms of the positive value, the figure of 700,000 has come up of additional rates. Now, I get that there's some cynicism amongst some councillors about that rate, but let's just put that into context. 24,601, that equates to 3.5% of the $700,000 figure. So let's say the $700,000 figure isn't correct. Let's say it's 350,000. That's still more than 10 times the amount. Let's say it's 50,000. It's still more. Even if that figure is grossly incorrect, if that figure was incorrect to a margin of 95%, the increased rates to the city would still be greater, even with this administrative costs being paid. Now, let's think of another way. The SARs contribute over $700,000 per annum to the increased maintenance of our parks. Now, what is the cost to the city? 3.5% of that cost. Now, if a residents association came to us and said we want to build a sports pavilion in the area, we're going to pay 100% of the cost, but we just need you to take on 3.5% of the administrative burden of this facility. This city would jump at it. In fact, at the moment, this city very often will do a 50-50% co-contribution at a minimum when it comes to the construction of sporting facilities. It's already been mentioned, the Sir James McCusker Park as a key example. As Councillor May pointed out, if Sir James McCusker Park was not subject to a SAR, you would imagine the city would have to pick up that bill to maintain it to that standard, similar to what we do at Mullaloo, similar to what we do at the other parks, because that is used at the moment as a great facility for weddings and for other initiatives. The other point I would make is that suburbs are voluntary making this option to contribute to this scheme. If there was not a positive benefit on house prices and therefore on the rates being paid, why would they go forward and do that? There was some discussion before about the need for point one, which is to clearly state does not support the inclusion of the city's internal administrative costs within the annual specified area rates costs. The point I made at the policy committee meeting, which I will make today, the time that has been spent reviewing this policy would be very similar in cost and administrative costs than what we are discussing here today. So for me, the best way for the administration to actually save money is to make a decisive decision on this topic and move along. By moving along, we're freeing the administration up to focus on other topics to clear the backlogs that exist in other areas, and we're putting downward cost pressure. So I say again, point one is the most important point because we provide a clear point, a clear perspective, and that's actually saving time. And we can move on with this issue and we can work towards, as I would like to see, more areas within the city of Joondalup becoming SAR areas, which in the long run will generate more rates for us to spend on improving facilities for all residents and ratepayers. So I encourage you all to support this motion in its entirety.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to speak on this item? Councillor Raftus, you've already spoken. Do you have a question?
Yes, question if I may, please, Deputy Mayor.
Sure, go ahead.
Through you, could the administration advise what is the impact on the long-term financial plan if this administration cost is not recovered?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, we haven't calculated the cost on the 10-year strategic financial plan, but given the revenue for the city is in excess of $140 million a year per year over the 10 years, I don't believe it would be material.
Any further questions, Councillor Rippers?
Sorry, I've missed the dollar value of that one.
You missed the dollar value?
That's a response.
Director Humphrey, could you repeat the response? Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we haven't done the calculation for the 10-year strategic financial plan, but given the numbers mentioned in the report, we would consider it immaterial.
Councillor Raftus, any further questions? No. Just to be consistent, I'll just call out that I'm not the Mayor, I'm the Deputy Mayor, thank you. And I will read out a declaration of interest that may affect St. Paul's Charity that's been brought for me from Councillor Chester regarding this item, 13.1.6, in that the extent of interest is that residents living in SARS areas are known to Councillor Chester. I will speak myself on this matter just to reinforce, I guess, my support for the recommendation before us, which is the officer's recommendation, and also the recommendation of the policy committee. And also, I'm very, very much aware of the voluntary work that that our residents' associations do in general, not just in the SAR areas, but oftentimes, I mean, the members of residents' association are invited to come to be thanked for what they do for our communities, but I do recognise that the work that they do is in terms of benefiting kind and unpaid for the greater benefit of not just their own suburbs, but also to the wider community. So that's much appreciated, and I do encourage elected members to support the recommendation of the officers on this one. Councillor Pitsey, do you have a question?
No, just that given Councillor Chester's
So I've already spoken. So you're doing a declaration of interest?
Yes, please.
Okay.
People in that live in SARS are known to me. My family live in one. And through this process, the SARS members of Woodvale Waters are also known to me.
So you're going to complete a declaration of impartiality?
Yes.
Yeah, if you can do the paperwork, please. Much appreciated.
You.
Just double-checking whether any elected member who hasn't spoken would like to comment on this item. If not, I'll revert back to Councillor King. Councillor Raftus, do you have another question?
Just a follow-up question, if I may, please, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In terms of the interest, is living in a SAR or having close family living in a SAR a financial interest? Just trying to get clarity in my own mind.
Straight to Parry.
Thank you for the question. I can quote from the departmental guidelines with regard to an interest in the imposition of any rate, charge or fee under section 5.631B. So as a member or an employee giving advice to council or a committee, you are not required to disclose any interest you have in the imposition of any rate, charge or fee. This applies in all respects and to all categories of rating, including differential rating, specified area rating, or decisions regarding moves from an unapproved valuation base to a gross rental value base.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus, do you have any further questions?
Yes. Is the recruitment of an administration cost a rate or as such?
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, from what I understand, the intent would be that the recovery would occur as a part of setting the specified area rate each year. It wouldn't be a fee separately on rate statements. It would simply result in a higher specified area rate being set by council.
Thank you. Any further questions, Councillor Raftus? If no further comments, questions from elected members, I'll go back to Councillor Kingston to close. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there was a lot in there in the discussion. For me, at least personally, the important thing that I've always tried to strive with reports in which I vote on them is trying to get some sort of clarity. And initially, well, not even initially, even up to the present, with this report, it is hard to get clarity on, because to me, there's two sides of this ledger. There's the increase in income, which it's said that the city is to receive through an increase in the GRV, and then on the other side of the ledger, it's the expenses of the administration costs. And through this, it's been hard, at least personally, for me to understand on both sides what is then a more correct or accurate figure it seems that on both sides that these are approximations or estimates. So I guess first, once again, to touch on the increased GRV and then the increase in general rates, it is, to me, it's hard to make these arguments, again, to use the word clarity, is that if you compare two suburbs in the city of Joondalup, say if you compared Connolly and you compared Currumbine, the differences of the rates that would be achieved in each of those suburbs can be attributed sometimes to certain natural features. Connolly has a golf course, Currumbine doesn't. But then, once again, if you compare somewhere like Heathridge to Edgewater, one is next to a lake, one is not. So there's multiple characteristics which lead to a certain rate being imposed, even to the way, so the GRV of a suburb, even to how a suburb was developed, so what type of infrastructure that a developer put in initially. So to me, I've always thought that these numbers which have been provided by the real estate agents, it's hard to have any certainty around those figures. I think it's an estimate, but whether there's certainty in it. When this report first came to the policy committee, I did actually ask the administration if it was able to provide some type of modelling or assessment on these numbers with the GRV figures that the city has, and then across different suburbs so we could try and get some clarity. But there's been some difficulty with that, and yes. And then, of course, on the expenses side, the administration aspect, from what I hear from the SAR groups about what is then the level of service which is received from the city, and then anecdotally, there seems to also have been a restructuring recently, so it's hard for me to say with certainty that it is around the 25% of the Level 7 employee, and I think the agenda as well talks about an approximation. Do people maintain being in a SAR because they want to be in a SAR? I'm not sure everyone in a SAR knows that they're in a SAR. I think many people do, though, feel that they have a benefit for it. But I think one of the things going forward which would be, I think, resolve some of these elements is if there was more clarity about which areas were funded by the SAR and which ones weren't. I do agree with Councillor Raftus around the McCubbin Park Pond. I remember that when it was in front of Council back in 2022, that that exact question was asked, is it being paid for by SAR funds or is it being paid by the general rate? And I believe it was paid out of the municipal funds. So there has been multiple instances where there has been a fair amount of uncertainty about where different costs were being apportioned. And I think from that also becomes, I think Councillor Hutton touched on, he believes that point one of the motion was the most important part to try and settle the matter. Once again, turning back to this point of uncertainty, I think the reason why there's always uncertainty is I think people in the community feel like there isn't a clear delineation. And sometimes even speaking to SAR members, that has there always been that clear delineation that we could try and achieve going forward? And the reason why it is such a hot topic in the community is, again, Councillor Hutton says, well, you know, why is it that all this money is being spent on it? Is that some things are more than just money. For I think there's questions about general equity, which people do raise around policies such as this. So I don't think it's unreasonable for people to be discussing this and have concerns about, is the policy that we have for SARS equitable? Are those costs of the administration being borne by the general ratepayer, or is that something that's actually being recouped by the increase in the GRV and an increased rate revenue that's being achieved? So I think a lot of these comments are valid concerns that do need to be worked through. Yes, so returning then to the recommendation, again, I personally, at this stage, I still feel like I have a lot of uncertainty around the administration costs and what services are provided by the city and the income elements as well. As I said, it is uncertainty. But I'd encourage people not to support number one, but to support, if they wish to support, not passing on the cost, to support number two. I think number one is unnecessary, is that if we already have a policy, why double up with a council resolution? So, as I said, our policy and our position should be in a policy, not in just a council statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kingston. Now that the closing remarks have been made, just to reiterate that the voting system is still down. So we're voting on item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review, and we're voting on the recommendation of the officer and the policy committee, which should be before us. We're going to deal with them separately. So first of all, we're going to vote on point one, which you see on the screen in front of you. Let's see, members, please, by show of hands, support for part one. Thank you, elected members. Okay. I'll read out the elected members that supported part one. Would be Councillor Fishwick, Councillor Chester, Councillor Ventura, Councillor Hamilton Prime, Councillor Pizzi, Councillor May, Councillor Jones, Councillor Hutton, and Deputy Mayor Councillor Hill. Okay, great. Thank you. We'll now move on to parts two and three, which will be voted on together.
Sorry, don't we need to also call for and against for the vote?
Okay, new advice. So those against, thank you, show of hands. That's Councillor Kingston, Councillor O'Neill and Councillor Raftus. Thank you. We're now going to vote on parts two and three together. So firstly, elected members, by show of hands, those who are in support of the recommendation for parts two and three. Thank you. In support, that's Councillor Fishwick, Councillor O'Neill, Councillor Chester, Councillor Vinciullo, Councillor Hamilton Prime, Councillor Pizzi, Councillor May, Councillor Jones, Councillor Kingston, Councillor Hutton and Deputy Mayor Councillor Hill. Show of hands those against. Thank you, Councillor Raftus. That completes the item before us. The next item on the agenda is the adoption by exception resolution. So I'll be seeking a mover and a seconder to the following motion that pursuant to City of June Club Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013 Clause 4.8, adoption by exception resolution, Council adopts the following items: 12.1, 12.2, 12.3, 12.5, 12.8, 12.9, 12.10, 12.11, 12.12, 12.13, 12.14, 12.15, 12.16, 13.1.3, and 13.1.5. Just make sure that's fully recorded and agreed to by governance. Can I have a mover for that motion, please? Thank you, Councillor Ventura, and seconder, Councillor O'Neill. Thank you, councillors. By a show of hands in support of that motion, please. Thank you. Voting is closed and carried unanimously. Next item is reports of the Chief Executive Officer. Okay, this will be discussed after motions which previous notice have been given. Next item being urgent business, of which we have nil, just checking. Next item 16, motions of which previous notice has been given. There's one notice of motion before us, which is item 16.1 from Councillor Kingston, Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme. Seeking a mover for that motion, Councillor Kingston, thank you. Do we have a seconder? Councillor O'Neill. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you, yes. I'll move the... Actually, we've already moved it. That's okay. The purpose for this, which this notice of motion relates, is that actually an item which was earlier in the agenda. So if you remember that we received a petition from residents in Ocean Reef regarding the telecommunications monopole. And the contentious element about that was that that was built in a 4-metre marine precinct, 4-metre height limit, within a marine precinct within the Ocean Reef Marina, and a 35-metre monopole was erected in that site without community consultation. The Ocean Reef Marina project is slowly progressing, and I believe shortly in a couple of months there will be the appointment of a developer for the site, at least for the city centre area. And this is to respond to potential concerns which might arise from it, is that if the development is developed according to the precinct plan, the highest building height will be roughly 9 stories, which is about 30 metres. And so that is what is currently has been advertised to the community through the public consultation on all the planning documents. But, of course, as we all know, under the planning framework, a developer may seek discretions against elements that are within the planning scheme. So given the current building market, there is a concern which may arise that a developer may seek to build something that is far in excess or in excess of what has then been advertised to the public, what has been advertised to the public, and what their expectations are for the marina precinct. The concern around this is that if we look towards Scarborough and the building heights which were in the scheme in that location, sometimes they're around between 12 to 18 stories, which were in the scheme, and various development approvals bodies approved up to around 30 stories. So sometimes on the coast, there is the real risk that approvals are given, that discretions are sought, and approvals are given that are sometimes in excess of what are then the height limits within a planning scheme or within the planning controls for a particular site. So because of that risk, what's being requested is that we ask the Minister for Planning to insert within the scheme text for the Ocean Reef Marina, so it's not everywhere, it's just within the marina scheme itself, the ability to appeal planning decisions if we believe that they're inappropriate. So there's two parts to this motion, which is one, asking the planning minister that the City of Joondalup, as the relevant local government, can appeal decisions within the marina precinct, a person whose interests are affected by the development approval. So at this stage, the reason also why this motion is being framed this way is that 1.1 actually represents the council's position over the last 4 or 5 years. Whenever there's been a report that's come to the council relating to third-party appeal rights, this council has always supported that there should be third-party appeal rights, at least for the local government. 1.2 seeks to try and expand that slightly. In previous reports that has been presented to the council, there has been in previous reports that have been presented, the council has supported allowing neighbouring property owners to appeal planning decisions. For the marina precinct itself, for the Ocean Reef Marina, the reason why it says a person whose interests are being may be affected by the development application and not just the adjacent owners is because all the land that is in the marina precinct at the moment will either be owned by the state government or, as it develops, by the developer. So there isn't actually an adjacent community owner. But as far as the visual amenity and the other impacts that will occur for the surrounding residents in Ocean Reef, that's why it's framed this way, say, a person whose interests are affected. So this is about trying to make sure that there is some certainty. When the monopole was first appeared for the people in Ocean Reef, there was a rally, and I believe there were candidates for state members, for Hillary's and both Joondalup attended. And so there is a lot of interest in this, trying to say, let's make sure that the Ocean Reef Marina actually stays within what the public expectations are for the site. Otherwise, if something happens, people will look to us, the local government, but we won't actually be able to do anything. And at the same time, people will say, well, you've supported this project as a council or as a local government up until this stage. People look to see, are we still responsible? Even if we're not legally, people still view us that way. There'll be a perception.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill has seconded. Do you wish to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just really quickly, everything that Councillor Kingston has a lot of merit, especially within this motion. Looking after our residents and their interests is should be always paramount to us. I won't go on too much about it except to remind everyone that it's something that's quite a contentious issue going on over the last few weeks in relation to Warwick Quarter. And if all councillors would reflect on that before voting for this one, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Advice from governance is that last point is not relevant to this particular item before us tonight. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Just a question on that last point. If we could have explanation or commentary from the relevant director about how they are different.
Brett Parry.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. My observation, if we were to look at development in the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme area and the proposal that is currently live in the Warwick Activity Centre, primarily the two things would be different insofar as the overarching schemes that apply. So I believe the comment was made, or certainly the intent through the notice of motion, is that the introduction of third-party appeal rights are intended to apply for the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme only, whereas the Warwick Quarter development is subject to the city's broader local planning scheme number 3. So in my mind, that would be the distinguishing feature between the two.
Thank you, Director Lee. And just to clarify from the advice from governance, I think there's no further discussion on Warwick Quarter. Councillor Hamilton Prime, do you have anything further? Let's hear members. Councillor Pizzey.
So just a question. The request for the Minister of Planning to take necessary steps to amend the scheme, does that compel the Minister to change the wording?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It wouldn't compel the Minister to amend the text of the scheme, in my view. I would imagine the notice of motion has been written in such a ways because the Minister for Planning is the ultimate decision maker when it comes to amendments to schemes, and therefore to introduce the ability for a third-party appeal right to exist for the Ocean Reef Marina development or within the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme area would require a decision by the Minister for Planning.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzey?
No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other elected members wish to comment? Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just by way of explanation, could the risk associated with obtaining the relevant planning approvals for one area more than the risk of obtaining the equivalent planning approvals for another area that is not subject to the third-party appeal rights? Could an explanation on that, please, Mr. Deputy Mayor?
Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I think it comes down to what would essentially be establishing two different processes or establishing the potential for two different processes to operate in two different areas. And so if you were to look at the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme, which is confined specifically to the Ocean Reef Marina Development Site, and then the broader City of Joondalup Local Planning Scheme area, if you're introducing an ability for a decision to be appealed by a third party, it's potentially increasing the risk profile for a development in terms of once an approval is received in, say, the City of Joondalup's local planning scheme area, the only person that can appeal that decision is the proponent or the applicant themselves. So really they're in control on whether or not the approval continues to be challenged. So they're the only ones that can challenge that approval. In introducing a third-party appeal right, whilst an approval may be granted for an application, it's then open to, by virtue of the term, a third party to potentially appeal that decision as well. And so I think to that end, the risk profile to an approval is increased because you're basically broadening the people that could appeal or challenge a decision.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Any other Vetting members wishing to speak on this item? If not, I will myself. Really a question to Director Lee. I note the officer's comment before us, and in the opening remarks from the mover, there's additional commentary made. I'm just wondering whether you can please just summarise your officer's comments for us, but also if you've anything to add in the context of the opening remarks from the member, just in case it shed any new information. Thank you.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As was pointed out in the reason for the motion as well as in the presentation, the City of Joondalup and its councillors considered the notion of third-party appeal rights several times since 2017. It's been four times since then, and there has been a consistent view at a broad level that council are in favour of third-party appeal rights, certainly for the local government as the third-party appellant. The latest position, or the most recent position that council holds on third-party appeal rights, supports third-party appeal rights being available to a local government as well as adjoining landowners and occupiers. And the intent behind that third-party appeal is also that it would apply to planning decisions made by the local government itself, a development assessment panel, the West Australian Planning Commission, and also the State Administrative Tribunal. In consideration of the notice of motion and what it seeks to do, there are essentially two aspects that are considered to go beyond or different to council's established position in relation to third-party appeals. The first, which was spoken to in the presentation on the notice of motion, insofar as it seeks to broaden the scope as to who other than the local government would be able to initiate a third-party appeal. It's looking to broaden that to include potentially persons affected by a decision rather than persons that are immediately adjoining, both landowners and occupiers. And then the second aspect is that council's existing position was established under the premise that third-party appeal rights would apply to planning decisions as a whole. So that apply to planning decisions made across every local planning scheme rather than a specific one. And so to that end, in terms of looking to confine the third-party appeal rights to the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme, whilst I understand the intent behind it, it does raise this question, which was just discussed, as whether or not it creates a situation where you have different profiles, different risk profiles in different scheme areas as to what a development approval is subject to.
Thank you, Director Lee. I have a follow-up question. I'm referring to the officer's comment, and I see shortly before the end a four-word sentence, "It is not supported." Could you please clarify if that comment is related to this notice of motion in full, given that there is a 1.1 and a 1.2? I just wish to clarify what that comment applies to. Thank you.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It would apply to the notice of motion in its entirety, and the reason for that, whilst there is some consistency in one aspect of the notice of motion insofar as it's consistent with council's established position in terms of introducing third-party appeal rights for local governments, at a broader level because there is a decision to apply third-party appeal rights to a specific scheme area as opposed to at a much wider level, so to apply to all town planning schemes. I believe that's something that council hasn't considered in the past nor determined a position on. So it's for that reason that whilst there are some elements that do have an alignment, broadly, that is why the officer comment references that the notice of motion is not supported.
Thank you for clarifying that, Deputy Members. Any other rights members wish to comment on this item? Councillor Hutton.
Could I just request that both 1.1 and 1.2 be moved separately?
Yes, we can do that. Anything further, Councillor Hutton? Any further comments from other members? If not, we'll go back to Councillor Kingston to close. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just try and close briefly, but touch on, I guess, some of the content of some of the questions and the discussion. To first address the question of why is it that this is not sought across the whole district, we have had consistent positions to support third-party appeals, at least for the local government and adjacent owners, across the whole district previously. If this is being sought specifically for the Ocean Reef Marina Scheme taxed area, because the current Labor government, it appears, has not been supportive of granting third-party rights generally. And so it was considered when I drafted this that there may have been a chance, that there may be more of a chance by suggesting a smaller area rather than a whole district should be subject to third-party appeals. In this case, this is an area where the development outcomes have been advertised to the public through the creation of the improvement scheme and all the concept drawings for the Ocean Reef Marina. And so if what was then advertised is then different from what ends up in a development approval, I think we can expect that our community will look to us and say, how is it that we're going to propose to resolve this, especially if a discretion is sought for a building height which is significantly in excess of the scheme text. So I think that first addresses that element. And again, the other element is why is there some differentiation between the council's previous decision for 1.2 there, instead of just being adjacent owners, a person whose interests are affected by an application for development approval. Again, that's fairly straightforward. I, again, still support the council's previous decision, but people who are affected by this, the adjacent owners, will all just be the developer and the state government going forward. So given that, does that allow other people, such as other people that are affected by the visual changes in amenity or other concerns about the bulk and the scale, the number of dwellings that will be in the marina precinct as well. People have all those concerns about this project as it goes forward. And we lack, the council and the local government generally lacks the ability to have a decision reviewed if something is inconsistent with what we've previously advertised in concept plans. So I think there was a general point about overdevelopment, not speaking about any specific sites, but if there has been a number of sites just generally around Perth where there has been concerns about applications that have been put in, where there's been overdevelopment of the site, and then questions about the relevant decision makers, what will they do with particular applications that are given. I gave an example in Sorrento, but I guess there could be other examples. So if an application is put in that is overdevelopment of the site, and if it is approved by a relevant decision maker, what will be our response? If we just say to the minister at that time, well, now we'd like to have third-party appeals, that could be a six-month process, and the minister might say no. Again, is that if there was a significant development which was occurring, say in any local government around the state, and we were just trying to respond to it at the time that the application is put in, what are we going to do then? We don't have appeal rights, and so then if after a statutory decision-making time frame, which could be 90 days or longer for other bodies, again, what are actually our credible options to try and respond and respect our community? And so, especially with the Ocean Reef Marina, there's been a lot of concept plans that have been put out showing what are the heights, what are the expectations, and a lot of the community supports it based on what they believe they saw in those concept plans. As far as the height, the bulk, and the scale, if all of a sudden the height, the bulk, and the scale of this development is significantly different, I think we might have reputational issues on our hands. And I think generally that third-party appeals are positive for the planning space. I know Councillor Fishwick raised the question of risk, but I think they're positive for the planning space because if we think about risk, the risk at the moment with the way planning approvals are set up in WA is the risk is if you don't approve, then you can be constantly put through an appeals pathway. But if you approve, that's the end of the matter in many cases. That decision is conclusive. So if you allow appeals, it actually waits it for the decision maker. They have to consider both the risk of approval and refusal. So I hope everyone can consider these matters and support what could be concerns in the near future as a developer is appointed for the site. Thank you.
Just a point of order, Mr. Deputy Mayor, on clarification. In relation to if one is adopted and two is lost, then clause one, which we don't need a clause one, but it just says the person's listed below, so some wordsmithing needs to be done before I could consider it, I think.
Thank you for the point of order. I'll refer to governance advice. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, you could just have insert the below, but it's up to elected members to determine how this amendment might take form.
Could I just ask Director Parry that the change that you suggested gets typed up on the screen so that Councillor Fishwick can review it? Thank you. Councillor Fishwick, just referring back to you, the changes are made. How does that look to you? Are we clear on what that would mean?
I'm satisfied. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch your comment.
I think that clarifies it for me. Thank you.
Councillor Kingston, do you agree with that change?
If it removes the obstacles for Councillor Fishwick, then yes.
Thank you. And Councillor Meagle, seconder. Okay, so the voting system is still done. So we're still going to deal with these two items separately. So we're voting on the notice of motion number one and specifically on the first part, 1.1 before us. So this is a vote for those that support, by a show of hands, part 1.1. Thank you. You can put your hands down, but that was support from Councillor Raftis, Councillor Fishwick, Councillor O'Neill, Councillor Chester, Councillor Pitsey, Councillor Kingston, And Councillor Hunt. Those voting against, please. 1.1. Thank you. That's Councillor Ventura, Councillor Hamilton Prime, Councillor May, Councillor Jones, and Deputy Mayor Councillor Hill. The voting is closed and part 1.1 is carried. We'll now move on to part 1.2. Elected members, by a show of hands, those who support part 1.2 of this item. That would be Councillor Raftus, Councillor O'Neill, Councillor Chester, Councillor Pitty, Councillor Kingston and Councillor Hutton. By a show of hands, those against. Councillor Fishwick, Councillor Ventura, Councillor Hamilton Prime, Councillor May, Councillor Jones and Deputy Mayor Councillor Hill. I declare the voting tied, 6-6, and therefore as presiding member I have a casting vote. And my vote is against part 1.2. Therefore, declares that that part of the motion is not carried. Councillors, we are now about to move to the confidential item 14.1. With that in mind, we need a procedural motion to close the meeting to members of the public. So I will need a mover and a seconder, but the motion is that Council, in accordance with Section 5.23, brackets 2, brackets B, and brackets E, brackets 2, of the Local Government Act 1995, and clause 5.2, brackets 2, of the City's Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013, resolves to close the meeting to members of the public to consider the confidential attachments relating to the following item. 1.1 being item 14.1, confidential employment contracts of the Director of Corporate Services. Part 2 of the motion is that Council permits the following employees to remain in the chamber during discussion on item 14.1, confidential employment contracts, Director Corporate Services, while the meeting is sitting behind closed doors as detailed in part 1.1 above. Those being 2.1, the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. James Pearson, 2.2, the Director of Governance and Strategy, Mr. Jamie Perry, and 2.3, Manager of Governance, Mrs. Kylie Bergman. Can I have a move for that motion? Councillor Ventura and seconded by Councillor O'Neill. Council, we're still working on a show of hands. Can we have a show of hands in support of that motion, please? Those that support the motion. Thank you. That's carried unanimously. I will just check from governance that whether we have the Thank you. In accordance with clauses 5.2, 6 and 7 of the City of Joondalup Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013, the decision of Council is to be read aloud by the presiding member as follows. The decision of Council was that Council Part 1 notes the intent of the CEO to renew the employment contract of the Director of Corporate Services for a further 5-year period from 3rd of February 2025. And point 2 notes that the terms of the employment contract will be the same as the current contract, which expires on 2nd of February 2025. We now have a further motion to resume the order of business. The motion is that Council resumes the operation of Clause 4.3 of the City of Joondalup Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013 Order of Business. If I can have someone to move that motion, Councillor Ventura, seconded by Councillor O'Neill. By a show of hands, those in favour. Thank you. That's carried unanimously. Next item on the agenda is item 17, announcement of notices of motion for the next meeting. Are there any notices of motion to be considered for the next meeting? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, I will be putting forward a notice of motion for the CEO to investigate and provide a report into the actions of the Water Corporation within the City of Joondalup and the environmental and other impacts they have on the City of Joondalup when undertaking works on services within the city.
Thank you. Any other elected members? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I have two. The first one is about to request the modification of the Mindaya Regional Council sitting allowances to be paid to the person who attends the Mindaya Regional Council meetings. And then secondly, a second notice of motion to request the changing of the Mindaya Regional Council ITC allowance from $3,500 down to the the tax threshold figure. The figure which is used by the ATO, which is $300, then anything above that to be substantiated with evidence.
Okay, I'm sure you will clarify precisely what your notice of motion is when the time comes, Councillor Kingston. Any further notice of motion relating to members? If not, we'll move to closure of the meeting. That concludes tonight's council meeting, and I hereby close the meeting at 9:36 p.m. Thank you all in attendance.